Blog Talk Radio.
County, ladies and gentlemen, you know it. It's always in Union City. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the Professor Fernando Uribe. And I do want to welcome you all here tonight, the 24th of January, the year 2019. Of course, I hope you're having a wonderful 2019 as we go along here, folks. And again, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever and however you might be tuning in here tonight, throughout the Garden State, and of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. I do want to say thank you everybody tuning in tonight, folks, on the, I guess, celebrating the first birthday of Politically Direct here on Blog Talk Radio, and certainly with my partnership via Insider NJ. It's been a wonderful year, just outstanding guests. The support from family and friends online here concerning the podcast has been overwhelming. I can't say it enough, and as we start year two here, on Blog Talk Radio, I promise you, we'll keep covering the issues and discussing the topics that matter the most to you, my fellow Jersey residents, and again, holding those in power accountable and certainly trying to get clarity about what's going on in today's political climate here in the state of New Jersey. So again, thanks to everybody here as Politically Direct celebrates 1 year on the air tonight. And I couldn't be more grateful to all of you. So thanks again, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you can write to the show's inbox, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Again, if you have a suggestion or topic for a future guest or an issue to discuss here on the air, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I do answer my emails promptly, and I, again, do welcome emails at all times, and I will make sure to get back to you expediently in terms of whatever you're writing about, whether you love the show, you don't, whatever I can do to make it better, I'm all ears, folks, and I love getting emails. So again, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me on Instagram at @your_favorite_Fernando. And certainly you can check me out on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Brand new likes, tons of new followers each and every day, folks, on the program's social media. So again, I cannot be grateful enough to all of you, and thanks for supporting the show, not just online, but also via social media. So, and for all you Facebook subscribers, take a moment to please go to the official page for Politically Direct, like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, so don't be shy and call me toll free, 818-572-8032. Once again, toll free number tonight, 818-572-8032, and our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. And don't forget to check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Outstanding columnists. It starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, certainly moving down the line with Fred Snowflake, and certainly many others that are employed at Insider NJ. I'm proud to call them teammates, proud to work with them, and certainly you can't go wrong, folks, with the political coverage that we provide, whether it's, you know, checking out the news on your smartphone, tablet, PC, or Mac. Again, once you go to www.insidernj.com, right at the very top, you'll see a subscribe button. Click on it. It's absolutely free, and you'll be registered in our morning intelligence briefing. So when you wake up in the morning having your coffee, maybe you're watching SportsCenter, Fox Sports in the morning, as I like to do, the sports commentary shows, or some of the cable news morning shows, hey, you're checking out your inbox, see what's in your email. You'll always see the morning intelligence briefing, right, again, conveniently delivered there to you, and again, courtesy of Insider NJ. Again, make sure you check them out on Facebook and like them. Don't forget to also follow them on Twitter at Insider NJ, and of course on the, again, on their website, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start your day and finish the day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff. Folks, again, as I said right at the top of the show, I cannot be more thankful to all of you for tuning in as we celebrate 1 year on the air on Blog Talk Radio. It's been great to do so, and certainly partnering with Insider NJ is the best thing I could have ever done. And again, I just want to give a shout out to my bosses over there. Certainly, I'm grateful to the Graham family for their belief in my abilities and for supporting the show and for wanting to keep the show on the air. I mean, they believe in the product, they believe in the content, and it's extremely reassuring to know that because of, again, their confidence in me and certainly wanting to continue doing this show and certainly keep it, you know, broadcasting with me on a weekly basis. I can't say enough about my boss, Pete Oneglia. Sometimes I'm a pain in the ass to him, but I know that he knows I love him deep down, and certainly he's great to work with. He's one of the best bosses I've ever had. Gives me a lot of autonomy, gives me a lot of creative control and creative freedom on this show to come on here each and every week and to host a podcast that is different, a podcast that is informative, educational, at times entertaining as well. And I wouldn't be able to do that without, you know, again, his guidance and his support. He's a guy who's always had my back. He's a guy who's always been in my corner. And Pete, if you're listening tonight, I'm grateful to you. You know, again, you know, knowing that you believe in this show the way you do, and again, going up to our editor-in-chief as well, Max Pizarro, who I know is a fan, it means a lot to me. And certainly, you know, without you folks listening every week, it wouldn't be possible. So, you know, and again, it sort of just leads me to thinking about what this show means statewide, and it's developed quite a gathering and a following online. Not just via the website with Insider NJ, but also on social media. So for that, again, I say to all of you, thank you. And it means a lot. It means a lot to people around the state that respect this show, starting first and foremost with NJTV's Michael Aaron, the great Michael Aaron, the dean of New Jersey, you know, journalism. And, you know, I was proud to have him on twice last year. Not a lot of people in New Jersey can say they've had Michael Aaron on for over an hour discussing the political scene in New Jersey, but yours truly can brag about that. And I've been grateful enough to receive an invitation not once but twice to his show on NJTV Reporters Roundtable. As again, if you follow the show on social media, you know I appeared in November. I'm not going to lie to you, I was a little bit nervous, but I felt I did well. The feedback was great. And I just appeared last Friday on the most recent edition of Reporters Roundtable with him. Good appearance there with some outstanding journalists that I got to meet with and talk on the air about issues that are important. And one of the issues that I talked about on the air during Reporters Roundtable on NJTV last week is all the hoopla and everything that's going on, you know, when we talk about the tragic circumstances surrounding Katie Brennan. And that is the subject of my first shot here tonight on Politically Direct. Now, folks, again, unless you've been living in a cave, you're well aware that the Katie Brennan story in New Jersey has really engulfed the political scene. For those of you who are not aware, I'm going to try my best to give you as a succinct a synopsis as I can without being long-winded. But in the summer of 2017, during the Phil Murphy campaign, as he was vying for the governor's seat against Lieutenant Governor Kim Guadagno, it was reported that one of the campaign workers, Katie Brennan, who is a Jersey City native, and I believe still lives in Jersey City with her husband, was sexually assaulted by a fellow Murphy campaign staffer by the name of Al Alvarez. I mean, again, this is all public record. You know, it's been out there. It's been, you know, discussed openly, not just in hearings in Trenton, but also certainly in the news media and the news cycle. And it was led to believe that during 2017 that the Hudson County Prosecutor's Office, who was made aware of these allegations, decided not to pursue any prosecution because they felt there was not sufficient amount of evidence. And certainly, as we learned last year, that Ms. Brennan spoke with the Wall Street Journal, and a lot of details came out about the incident. Certainly, there was some questions for the Murphy administration in terms of they were made aware of this once Governor Murphy took office. It's my understanding that Ms. Brennan reached out to the governor and his wife via email, looking to bring this matter to his attention. And subsequently, it depends who you ask in New Jersey. It's either been lost in the pipeline. There's still some remaining questions about what's going on. And some things remain rather, you know, innocuous concerning what happened on that fateful night in 2017. And one of the things that really that I brought up during my appearance on Reporters Roundtable, and of course, we heard the news just yesterday that the Middlesex County Prosecutor's Office has decided to not indict a former senior official who worked for the Murphy administration, and that they too would not pursue criminal charges against Alvarez. So certainly that has created a large influx of outrage in New Jersey to some extent. And I talked about this last week on the air on Reporters Roundtable. Much of the topic was centered around Governor Murphy's first State of the State address. And during it, my colleagues had mentioned that looking at the transcript of the address by Governor Murphy, which contained over 5,000 words, approximately 1,600 words were dedicated to discussing tax incentives with the EDA and what could be done better after an audit was performed. And at no point in time during this address, and again, maybe it's because the case is still under investigation, the Attorney General is looking into it, we have hearings going on in Trenton concerning Katie Brennan and what's going on with this matter. Certainly, who hired Alvarez if these allegations were known. And again, there's been a lot of, outrage and hysteria about this as to who knew what and where and when, who hired Al Alvarez. You know, apparently there's some incongruity as to, no one can really pinpoint who hired him, even with these allegations out there. Again, how much did the governor's office know has also come under some scrutiny. And I talked about it on the air live, and I said, listen, one of the things that was disappointing to me. And you can check out my appearance there, folks, again, on njtvonline.org, so in the most recent one there during the archives. It's also on the Politically Direct Facebook page and also on the show's Instagram. But I said it very openly that, I'm disappointed that Governor Murphy didn't address this situation. Now, maybe he can't address Katie Brennan by name specifically because the case is under investigation, but he could have talked about, the seriousness of sexual assault. And what message does it send to victims of sexual assault in New Jersey, both men and women, when this case seems to be, I don't want to accuse anybody of wrongdoing, I don't want to accuse anyone of sort of sweeping this under the rug, but it seems that there are still a lot of questions that remain, and it's going on almost 2 years. And this is a concern, and I said, this is disappointing to me to hear that, the outrage or lack thereof when it comes to addressing sexual assault, and how should victims feel in New Jersey? What motivation should victims have now to want to come forward when they're seeing this sort of, quite frankly, negligence at the state level? And again, I'm not accusing Governor Murphy of anything. I'm not accusing Attorney General Grewal of anything. But again, folks, optics are important. And the visual is imperative in politics. And when we're seeing that this is dragging out a lot longer than it should have, it just casts a very luminous shadow going on in Trenton about hiring practices, about sort of a political culture. And for me, as I said, I brought up the example, last fall, folks, sometimes we have short memories, but if you remember, many Democrats, both statewide and nationally, were up in arms and were having tantrums on the air about the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. And, you know, should we or should we not believe Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, who accused then Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault over 30 years ago? We're never going to know really what happened back then. And again, a lot of accusations were thrown out. But folks, all we saw on social media were, you know, those hashtags, hashtag believe women, hashtag believe women always, you know, hashtag believe her. And we saw a lot of outrage in New Jersey. We saw the junior senator of New Jersey, Cory Booker, you know, and depends who you ask, you know, make a fool of himself during the hearings when he was talking with this sort of sanctimonious tone to him about the Brett Kavanaugh hearings and whether or not we should believe Dr. Blasey Ford. And if we're not doing so, this is a disgrace and it's an abomination to women everywhere. And it's sending an awful message to victims of sexual assault. Well, where's the indignation now in 2019 when it comes to Katie Brennan? And again, we may never know what happened during the summer of 2017, during that evening, that tragic evening, okay? It's become a he said, she said type of scenario, as many of these cases become. But you can hear a pin drop, ladies and gentlemen, with the collective silence in New Jersey by many Democrats, by many on the left, who have chosen to stay quiet during this. Now, again, you might say, Fernando, this is apples to, you know, oranges. It may not be the same thing. Well, there was an insistence to believe Dr. Ford last fall and to just, you know, again, during the Me Too movement, everything else, there was an insistence on we must believe women when it comes to these accusations. We must take them seriously. We must investigate thoroughly. Well, I get it. They're investigating thoroughly now here in New Jersey. But where's the outcry about believing Katie Brennan? Where is the outcry or the outrage about why are we not sort of, you know, having more rallies? Why are there not public demonstrations about, you know, showing support for Katie Brennan? I mean, you can hear a pin drop, folks, the silence in the state about the situation. And I just feel that, you know, when you have to define hypocrisy, that right there, ladies and gentlemen, is a crystal clear illustration about how hypocrisy rears its head in politics every single day. And it's, quite honestly, it is just, I think it's a disgrace. I was disappointed that this wasn't addressed during the State of the State address last week, again, by Governor Murphy. And again, as I said, perhaps because it's under investigation, he couldn't mention her by name. Maybe he couldn't discuss any facts of the case. I get all that. But the idea that you couldn't bring up the importance of raising awareness about sexual assault and how it impacts men and women in New Jersey should have been discussed. And the fact that it wasn't, I think, was wrong. And I have reached out to the governor's office, where I'm hoping to hopefully get the governor on in the month of February. I've been having email correspondence. It's really hard to sort of get the governor down for a specific date and a time. But believe me, folks, I'm trying here, and I'll get him on. I promise. I get good guests for you. I'll continue doing that. But rest assured, and again, I might hear some, you know, calls before then, whether or not I can discuss it. But certainly, if I can discuss this openly with the governor, I'm going to bring it up to him. Because again, you know, last fall, we heard Democrats in New Jersey, okay, and Democrats nationwide that were just sitting on this sanctimonious pedestal talking about believe women, believe women, believe women. Wait a minute. Where is that now in New Jersey? That's something you should think about, folks. And to me, again, and if you're not disappointed, then you're not paying attention. And this is something we should all be paying attention to in 2019. And that's my first shot here on Politically Direct. All right, folks, toll-free number tonight here, 818-572-8032. Once again, 818-572-8032 is the toll-free number here on Blog Talk Radio. And again, folks, if you wish to call in, I'd love to hear from you. We have a great guest coming up in just a few moments, a guy who's been in the news cycle here locally in Hudson County, but he's certainly a statewide figure. And one that I'm very interested in having on tonight because, again, there's a lot to discuss here. Again, but folks, 818-572-80, and our toll-free number tonight is brought to you by Insider NJ. Again, as we're just awaiting our guests here in just a moment, folks, again, as I just alluded to during my opening monologue, today It was reported on New Jersey Advanced Media for NJ.com. It was also discussed on Insider NJ as well. You know, Katie Brennan today went on the record and talked about how she felt hearing the news from her attorney as it pertained to the Middlesex County Prosecutor's Office and their decision that to not pursue charges against the man that she's accused of sexually assaulting her in 2017. Now, certainly Katie Brennan went on record today talking about she was, quote, "I went from numb to angry to crying." And it's my understanding, again, from the account of the events here, that Katie Brennan was driving to a meeting yesterday when her attorney called her to tell her that it was all over, to tell her that the prosecutor's office in Middlesex County decided not to pursue charges when it comes to the allegations she's made against Al Alvarez. And one of the things that, you know, is interesting is the idea that, you know, we're seeing some, again, quite a lethargic pace here. And it's tragic. And certainly, you know, a good amount of information out there reported by Insider NJ, and certainly one that I think is going to dominate the news cycle in the weeks and months ahead, as we know that the hearings are still going on. And this may not be going away anytime soon. So, again, we'll try to keep you up to date here on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, it is 8:20 here on the East Coast, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the show one of my very first guests last year, as the show is celebrating 1 year on the air. It's my pleasure to welcome back here to Politically Direct the 52nd governor of the state of New Jersey, the Honorable Jim McGreevy. Governor, how are you? Welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much, my friend. And I just had a great day in Trenton, and I was just at a treatment center with a number of our guys who had come out of prison and grappling with addiction. But today was a really good day. And if I can just thank Senator Vitale and Assemblyman Greenwald, just basically providing for legislation that people who want medication-assisted treatment, that is assistance in battling heroin addiction and fentanyl addiction, that they don't have to wait the 5 days to get the medicine. And this is so huge for our guys, because after years of being in prison, their resistance has gone down substantially to the heroin, and many times they come out and use the same large amounts, but now there's fentanyl in it, which is 50 to 100 times stronger than heroin. And so the great blessing of medication-assisted treatment is it stops the cravings, so that these guys, our clients, the people we're blessed to serve, don't have the cravings to use the heroin and to use the fentanyl. So that's a little bit of good news in the battle.
Definitely, Governor. And listen, it's great to have you on here. And certainly I know you have been an advocate for many years concerning those that have been incarcerated in New Jersey and have, you know, upon release, you know, faced the difficult task and the challenges of reintegrating back into society, trying to obtain job training, trying to just, you know, rehabilitate their lives. And we'll get to that in a little bit, because, again, you've become a symbol for that in New Jersey, Governor. So good job with it. And, you know, Jim, if I can just be frank with you, can I call you Jim? Is that all right, Governor?
Of course. That's my name.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Jim, certainly, you know, a lot of people reached out to me this week and said to me, Fernando, I am very eager to hear you have the governor on this week. And, you know, to no one's surprise, for anyone that's tension in New Jersey, specifically in Hudson County, you've been in the news cycle, Jim. And, again, I understand that from a legality perspective, there may be some things you're, you know, not able to discuss openly, but I do want to dissect what's going on because you've been in the headlines. There have been some misrepresentations out there in the media. And what I want to do tonight for our audience is to really dissect this. You know, as an academic, you know, as an educator, I'm all about breaking things down and dissecting them. And I want to be able to dissect, Jim, what's a myth and what's a fact concerning the headlines, because, again, you've been in the news cycle, and you're someone that a lot of people in New Jersey look up to because of your status, not just politically, but because of what you mean as an advocate for those that have been incarcerated and working with, you know, education and reentry programs that you have become the symbol for here in the state. What can you share with us tonight in terms of what is true about Jim McGreevy and what is not true concerning the headlines? If you can tonight, Jim, please.
And when you say the headlines, you're referring to Jersey City?
Yes, sir. Yes. I mean, again, your name's been in the news cycle for some time.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, let me just say, but one, thank you so much. And thank you for this program. And thank you for the service. And you know, my dear friend, Reverend Bolivar Flores, we're just grateful for your outreach to the community and making the community aware of the services that are available for them. But, you know, just let me, you know, and it was sad. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, what you want for your clients, what you want for the citizens are good services. For people that are looking for jobs, for employment and training, you want to provide them opportunities. For people that are coming home from prison, obviously they have so many more greater needs. I mean, whether it's housing, whether it's health care, driver's license. And so what mattered most to me was listening to the testimonies, to the witnesses, if you will, of those 30 people who came that night to share their story. And it's not about me, but it's about how our team gave these people a second chance. And so, you know, tonight, wherever we're listening to your show, we're with our family, we're with our loved ones. We have, you know, electricity in our refrigerator, in our lights. Well, for so many people that are coming back from prison or suffering from addiction, they don't have anything. They don't have a home. Many of them don't have a family. They're struggling with addiction. They're struggling with unemployment. And for them, they are candidly the poorest, arguably among the poorest of the poor. So for me, for Bolivar, for many of us, it was a great privilege to serve them. And, you know, that to me was probably the hardest, is that those people won't be served and they won't have access to those services at Martin's Place. And just, you know, maybe this is just poetic. My family is from Greenville and Lafayette. My mom was from Clark Street, 21 Clark Street. My dad was from 50 Lafayette. We were Arlington Avenue. And so that Greenville-Lafayette neighborhood meant a lot to me. And whether it was scrubbing the floor, it used to be a Ponderosa, then a Chinese restaurant, we were trying to build a home. We were trying to build a community and at Martin's Place. And so it's more with sadness than anything, and sadness that politics came before what I believe is the higher calling of service, and particularly service to some of the most vulnerable citizens in our community.
Well, let's talk about that, Jim, because politics, as you said, has reared its head in this saga. And, you know, depends who you talk to in Jersey City or even statewide about that know about this ongoing situation with you and your removal as executive director of the Jersey City Education and Reentry Program. You know, again, and it's important to, you know, try to dissect this as much as we can, because some would argue, and again, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, some would argue that, you know, your position at the time with the organization and this nonprofit, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, though, Jim, you're serving at the behest of the mayor in Jersey City. And I know that going back to 2013, when Stephen Phillips, you know, political capital was at its peak, you know, just being elected, you know, upsetting then Mayor Jerry Healey, taking really, you know, the local and the state political scene by storm because of his rise. We know that you were one of the first names that he introduced and that he was proud to stand with you and advocate for you and vice versa. And it seems that in 8 years, you know, in the 6 years since then, I mean, the rapport has deteriorated tremendously, at least from people I talk to. and the sources that tell me information. You know, tonight, Jim, you know, what can you tell us about that? Because, you know, that report seems to have broken down completely with your removal from the organization, but more so just sort of the whispers of, you know, maybe you and Stephen Philip were not on the same page for some time, and it was sort of, you know, a bubble, and at some point it was going to burst, and it did recently. Any truth to that, Jim?
Well, you know, it's for now, you know what counts though in all of this, is well, hopefully, what counts is what you do. So, are the services that you provide, are the lives that you touch. So, at the end of the day, when you know you look to whether it's a mayor or a county executive or a congressman or a senator. Ultimately, you know, maybe this is old-fashioned, but it's how many lives you touch, and do you touch them for the better? And so, you know, I realize that, you know, whether it's myself or you, we may not be everybody's cup of tea, and some people will like you and some people won't like you. But at the end of the day, you would hope to be judged by whether you're doing a good job and whether or not you are making the lives of people in Jersey City better, and not just, you know, candidly for the chosen few, but for, you know, frankly, people who need services, people who need, you know, to get a license and identification, people who need to have access to health care and a federally qualified health center, people who need Medicaid, people who need, you know, addiction treatment, people who need referrals to structured sober housing, people who need referrals to, you know, apprenticeship programs, I mean, programs like Project Impact. So, you know, I would hope it's not just about, you know, the popularity contest, because popularity comes in and popularity goes out. I think those people that build really long-term sustaining relationships are those people that deliver services, and so that's that's what I would have hoped to have been judged on. I would have hoped to have been judged on how many people we helped to secure training and employment, how many people we helped to get their driver's license, to get their Medicaid, to get their addiction treatment, to get employment, to move them from, you know, from addiction to sobriety, from prison to employment. Those are the, you know, whether that's what should count in life. I would hope so. And so, you know, I look at the whole Trump thing and the whole phenomenon of the tweeting, this and that and all the craziness, but it's just, you know, I guess I grew up in a politics, and, you know, my hero was John Kennedy growing up. I mean, sort of being young Irish Catholic, and it's not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And it was about giving back and giving back to the community. And so I see a community now, whether it's poor, you know, communities of color, whether Latino, and what we've done with CLON, we have, you know, all these member countries from Central and South America. We can get people their driver's license, their identity and identification literally in 5 days. Whether working with the community to help people get an ID card or driver's license, connecting people to Medicaid, that's the stuff that should count. And whether or not, you know, you're on the in crowd or the out crowd or the medium crowd, at the end of the day, hopefully your work speaks for itself. So,
well, you know what, Jim? That's
maybe
well
that's
said.
Old fashioned. I don't know.
No. But listen, Jim, and again, folks, if you're just joining us right now at 8:30 here on the East Coast, it's my pleasure to have here on the program once again the 52nd governor of the state of New Jersey, Jim McGreevy, a Hudson County native here on Blog Talk Radio and Politically Direct. So we're happy to have him on here this evening. You know, Jim, you really unwrapped a lot there in that narrative, and I think it's important for our audience tonight to sort of understand that while your commitment hasn't wavered to people that are, you know, challenged in New Jersey from an incarceration perspective, and certainly those that upon release have to struggle with obtaining employment, with perhaps still battling substance abuse, with perhaps having to deal with, you know, domestic violence in the household. I mean, there are a lot of issues and problems that those that, you know, re-enter society back after incarceration have to deal with. And we'll get to those in a little bit because, again, you know, certainly we know that you have become a symbol for a lot of people in New Jersey that represents that. But keeping it local again, and, you know, I appreciate your transparency tonight on the matter, Jim. But at the end of the day, you know, there are going to be people listening tonight that might say, well, you know, if Jim McGreevy wasn't getting along with the mayor and wasn't getting along with this board, and let me just say for the record, because, again, you brought up a name before that a guy who I think the world of, and, again, you know, Reverend Flores, let me tell you, is someone that I hold in high estimation. He's a wonderful man.
Oh, my
he's
God.
A guy
I
who,
mean,
he's great.
Yeah,
I mean,
he walks
phenomenal.
The walk
and,
every day.
Yes, definitely. And he's a guy that's been very supportive of this show, not just here on Thursday nights, but my local show in Hudson County on Wednesday nights. But, you know, he's a guy that he's been very vocal for you. And I know that maybe that's something that could endanger him in the sense of, you know, his presence within the organization, certainly any backlash with him. But it just seems that, you know, a lot of people tend to are just curious of, you know, Jim, is this just politics, not just Hudson County politics, but is this just politics at play, or were there some fundamental policy or directive disagreements that existed between you and the board in Jersey City and the mayor? Because I think tonight a lot of people are listening, Jim, and saying, wait a minute, something doesn't add up here. You know, for some time, you know, the mayor and former Governor McGreevy were buddy-buddy. They worked well together. They were standing shoulder to shoulder, advocating for these issues that matter to a lot of working class and poor people. And now we're seeing a complete and outright deterioration, if not disintegration. Mm-hmm. And people, Jim, you know, they question this. They're like, wait a minute, there's something at play here. What are we not knowing? What are people not talking about? And I think that, you know, at the heart of it, is it politics or was it a fundamental disagreement about the direction of the organization?
Yeah, I don't like, you know, I asked for you and you know this, that I asked that night, you know, what is the reason? And there was silence. And so just, you know, part of it is as a matter of, you know, fairness, as a matter of conscience that, you know, say what I will. I mean, I like to think that I work hard at what I do. I mean, literally, I'm just coming home from work now, and I love what I do. I'm blessed. For me, it's not work. It's you know, it's almost vocation. So, you know, there wasn't a reason given. I think people could fairly say, well, you know, McGreevy put too much of an emphasis on reentry as opposed to the general population. And that probably is, that's where my heart is at. But I also think that only 22% of our clients are reentry, that 78% of our clients were regular working people. So that's why I would argue I'd push back a little bit on saying that I think we were balanced in our approach. Does that make sense?
No, it does. But, and again, I think that what a lot of people would say to me, you know, listen, Jim, I'm sure you've heard it all and I've heard it all as well. But in the last couple of weeks since, you know, I'm securing your appearance tonight and speaking with Reverend Flores, who's been a great intermediary throughout this process, you know, people have said to me, you know, Fernando, at the end of the day, like, you know, I've heard it all. I've heard, you know, Jim's heart's in the right place, but man, but if you don't get along with the mayor, you know, what can you do? Or, you know what, you know, Jim was working really hard and maybe the board wasn't backing him up as much as they should have. Or maybe there wasn't, not a misuse, but maybe resources and funding wasn't, you know, used wisely. And maybe it was used poorly when it came to
Let me just
funding
push back on
programs.
That clearly.
Yeah.
I mean,
sure.
We stretched every dime to the max and thing into our clients. And we try to, you know, every available way, and we, you know, we chased down grants, training grants, and we chased down reentry grants, and we chased down employment grants. And so, you know, when people, you know, when people throw stones cavalierly, I mean, that's problematic because I take government really seriously. I mean, this is what I do for my life, right? This is my mission, this is my purpose. And so I think we ran a really good ethical, competent shop. And so, like, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the board changed, and people know what happened, and so, you know, obviously I've got my perspective of what happened and why, and it's unfortunate because at the end of the day, the people that will be hurt will be the people from Greenville and Lafayette that are coming back from Northern State Prison or Rahway and Trenton and looking for a beginning of a new life. And, you know, my hope, and maybe my hope is that, you know, if we do the right thing, if we do the next right thing, as they say in AA or NA, it's all going to be right. And for me, I realize that, you know, there are a lot of ways that I can improve in terms of myself personally or my management style or whatever. But I believe we worked hard. We worked hard as a team. We were dedicated. And at the final analysis, it wasn't my political speeches. It was our clients. And our clients spoke very eloquently. And it's not about me because I just coordinate. It's about the staff. It's about the employees. It's about the community. And so at the end of the day, I don't want to ring hollow or shallow and to say, you know, ring my bell. But I think the team we put there and the lives we changed, listening to those people talk about that in meaningful ways, that their voices should be the voices we listen to and not just the voices of ourselves, whether we be appointed or elected. The final analysis, I mean, it sounds, there's that great passage from Mark's gospel. And Jesus says, you know, the Son of Man comes not to be served, but to serve. It's for me, you know, being governor and, you know, you have the helicopter and the mansion and the beach house and this and all of that stuff are just trinkets. What I find to be the most meaningful is what I've done in service and reentry. And that to me is, you know, when you change an individual life, when you see a young man who's had a history of incarceration and addiction, you know, get a job and start living a healthy life and people turning around their lives, that to me is what gets me up in the morning. And so that's, you know, at the end of the day, I would hope that the voices of those voices, those stories, those narratives are what people would listen to most importantly. And so, like, I don't want to throw rocks at anybody, but I do want to be a fierce advocate. I do want to be a fighter for the people that can't speak for themselves. I do want to be a fighter for the poor. I do want to be a fighter for people who don't have housing, people who don't have employment opportunities, don't have training, or grappling with addiction. I mean, that's the reentry space, and that I take very seriously in being a fighter. But, you know, for me, you know, it's at this age of life, I just want to get back to the work of reentry.
Now, Jim, obviously, since your removal there, I know you've continued working. I don't know exactly what you could share today legally, but is this the last we've heard of you in the sense of this situation with the Jersey City Education Reentry Program? Is there any – I mean, listen, I understand you don't want to show your cards, and I get that, but I have to ask the question on the show anyway. Are there any avenues, you know, from a legal perspective that you might be pursuing or considering?
Well, I mean, they're, and I'm blessed. I mean, the lawyer who represents me, Michael Critchley, is perhaps arguably one of the best lawyers in the state. And so I'm blessed, and, you know, I'll follow his direction as this moves on. But and I'm grateful for his counsel and for his friendship and for his direction. And so, yes, I mean, I'll be listening to Michael's direction and advice. But for me personally, you know, what motivates me, my sense of mission, my sense of purpose is to focus on reentry. That's what I think, you know, that's what I think I was called to do.
Okay. You know, fair enough again. And I appreciate you being, you know, transparent.
And I appreciate your questions.
No, listen, and again, I appreciate.
No.
Well,
thank you, Jim.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. And so again, you know, I appreciate being transparent about this because it's not easy to talk about. I know a lot of listeners tonight, you know, have their opinions already formulated, and we're hopeful
and
that
you know
tonight,
what?
You know,
and my point to our listeners is, at the end of all of this, it's how we change lives. And at the end of all of this is, you know, whether, you know, whatever our opinion on the situation is, how are we making Jersey City a better place? How are we making these lives more productive, whether it's employment and healthcare and housing? That's how we make a stronger community. That's how we make stronger families. That's how we give children the opportunities to grow up in healthy ways, where a father, instead of being in prison, is you know, working at home and supporting a family, is a mother who might have been addicted is in sobriety. That's what we have to focus on. And it's being results oriented, right? And you know, you look at the,
sure.
at the great elected officials, whether in Hudson County in New Jersey, nationally. It's at the end of the day, it's not the speech, God willing, but it's that roof over your house, over your head. It's you know, sounds old fashioned. It's the chicken in the pot. It's whether or not people have a good, safe home, whether their kids have access to a decent education. It's really basics. And for me, it was giving those basics to people that were on the edge of life. And that's what was so heartening, is to see somebody with 16 felony convictions all of a sudden have a job. That's what meant something.
No, listen, absolutely. And again, Jim, you know, you've been a staunch advocate for those. And folks, again, if you're just joining us right now, it is 8:50 here on the East Coast. It's my pleasure to have here on the show, once again, the 52nd governor of the state of New Jersey.
Well, you're making me
sound
real
Jim.
Old.
Well, listen, I have to give you props. I mean, that's your title, Jim. You know what I'm saying? So I got to give you the respect,
hey.
You know. Now, Jim, you know.
But no,
kind of
and just like, you know, and just like – and for like so many of our – like, and we – you know, one of the things that Bolivar and I see is that people who came to this country legally and then, you know, have their identification ripped up and destroyed and can't find work and you know, for so many of our clients, particularly our clients that were Latino that had court involvement, I mean, and we literally had clients where, unfortunately – you know, ICE was literally taking people away. And so, you know, my grandparents came to this country from Ireland two generations ago. I mean, my grandfather came off the boat and was a police officer on Communipal on the old 4th Precinct. On my father's side, my mother's side, he was an operating engineer in the union. I mean, this is a nation of immigrants. This is a nation of people. I mean, my family lived in Greenville and Lafayette, which was poor then. In fact, I was at Our Lady of Sorrows Church the other day with a great Panamanian priest, and he was talking about the community. These are the people. This is what America is about giving opportunity to them and to their children. And that's what, you know, and then for those that get caught up in the cycle of violence or in addiction, it's helping them, you know, find a way back to society, not writing them off. And the problem with our criminal justice system is, you know, we're 5% of the world's population, but we're 25% of the world's incarcerated population. I mean, we lock up more fellow Americans than any other country does their own citizens. I mean, we're one and Russia's two. And so, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, that Bolivar and that I and our entire team understood was that the whole notion of second chances, that people make mistakes. I know I make mistakes literally every day of my life, but you have to give people a pathway, a road back to sobriety, a road back to employment. And so that's why I think it's, you know, I don't know. I think it's the most meaningful work that I've done as a person. And I'll tell you, you know, being in seminary for 3 years has a way of changing you.
And a friend of mine said, you know, maybe you were blessed that you didn't figure this out on your deathbed, but you figured this out beforehand. So what gives you meaning is not, you know, the material possessions you have, is not the size of the house, is not, but it's, you know, how have you made your community better? And that was the frustration about Martin's Place, because I think, you know, we did make it better. And whether it's the guy who is still active in his addiction coming in the morning to have a cup of coffee, or, you know, spending time with the guy at McDonald's or the local shop talking. I mean, we were a positive force for good in the community. And that was with jobs. And I think that was across the board. And that's what was so meaningful to me, to Bolivar, and to our team. So, and that I think is largely going to be lost, which hurts.
Well, I'll say this much, Jim, because I got to see this firsthand, where this past Thanksgiving I was very privileged to get an invite from not just you, but also from Reverend Flores to attend the Thanksgiving Day brunch. And it's one of those things, Jim, where, you know, and I remember it was a really cold Thanksgiving morning. My goodness, I remember taking an Uber down there because I knew driving would be hellacious. But, and I remember going there and speaking in front of everyone. Again, I'm really thankful that I was invited to do so. And I felt very, very, you know, humbled by the invitation. But something that really stood out for me, Jim, when I got there, and the good work that you were doing, and so was Reverend Flores and the entire staff there. I know Chief Prosecutor Jake Hudnut was also there.
Yes.
At the facility.
So grateful
and, you know,
for his presence.
Yeah, and Jake's great people. I've had him on my local show last year. I'm hoping to have him on again as we're seeing, you know, criminal justice reform evolving in New Jersey. And we'll talk about that in a minute. I want to get your thoughts on it since, you were a former governor, and certainly want to get your thoughts on it. But, you know, it just reminded me when I walked in there, you know, I was so grateful to that day, Jim, because it reminded me how fortunate I was to grow up where I grew up, how fortunate I was to grow up with two loving parents that worked hard to provide for me and show me a good path and try to instill as many good values as they possibly could. I didn't learn all of them, but I learned most of them. And, you know, I walked in there and I was really grateful because, you know what, I'm really lucky, but I know not everybody is. And I know that if I can go today and contribute and show my support for the hardworking people, because listen, there were a lot of people there that volunteered their time, you know, Carolina also, that works
an
there
angel.
As well. She's great. Oh, she's fantastic. And she's been on my show before last year. Great guest. And again, going back to Roman Flores and everybody else, it just sort of, you know, and for everyone tuning in tonight, you know, what it doesn't have to be the holiday season, but if you can donate your time to organizations like this and work with people that are challenged in the way of to reenter society and are really making an effort. Because, Jim, listen, one of the things that, you know, I'm very aware of is, you know, before I entered academia, you know, I worked in our criminal justice system for 10 years. I worked at the Hudson County Jail, and I worked also at the Essex County Jail. So I saw firsthand where, you know, a lot of my colleagues in academia are just sort of like book smart, and they're just career students, and they've never stepped a foot inside of any jail. So everything they've lived or experienced is through a book. Like, I lived it. Like, I lived it by walking into county jails respectively, sitting down with inmates, talking with them, trying to sort of ascertain exactly what the issues are, who's, you know, who can be helped, who can be not. I know maybe you and I may differ on that philosophy, because sometimes, you know, you're the eternal optimist, and I admire that. But sometimes, Jim, you know, we look at certain inmates that we work with, and sometimes, you know, we're frustrated that maybe they're not changing their ways, they're not going to rehabilitate themselves, and they're just sort of going to perpetuate the same sort of revolving door cycle that seems to be our criminal justice system. So, you know, for me, going there that day on Thanksgiving and participating, it just reminded me that, you know, there are people that do want to get better. There are people that do want to pick up the pieces of their lives. And that's not always easy. And I know that you serve as a symbol for that, because you yourself, you know, as you talked about openly on this show before with me, you know, you were also faced with that adversity of having to pick up your life and start over and persevere.
Exactly.
And that's instructive.
Share that with us, please.
But I mean,
share that with us, please.
Yeah, and I think what's so powerful is what you just shared is that not everybody starts the race of life from the same place. And I think that's so important to understand that people have different afflictions, people have different resources. And so that if people learn from public housing, they need to change and they need to have an opportunity to change. And I think that's part of the criminal justice system. And if I can, you know, one of the dangers is to lock people permanently into a narrative. And that's not healthy. Does that make sense?
No, it does, because, again, and we'll get to sort of in a moment, but, you know, Jim, we've been living in a sort of political climate for many years now. And I know some people might say, well, it's a product of the last 3 years. I disagree vehemently. I think that it's a narrative that's existed for many, many years in the way that we look at our criminal justice system, in the way that
we look at
reform. And I'll sort of pick your brain tonight, because we know that in the news cycle, we understand that right now in 2019, very different than when you were governor, there is this insistence and this push to not just only decriminalize marijuana, for example, but also legalize it recreationally. And listen, Jim, you see it firsthand by working with prison populations. And I've talked about this on the show repeatedly. You know, a lot of my disenchantment with this process is the fact that, you know, we've been locking up people, black and brown, for decades when it comes to like these ridiculous marijuana laws. And when we know that the data tells us that
you're
white people
so
in
right for it. But back then it was a criminal justice problem.
Sure, exactly.
And now all of a sudden it's a public health problem.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, the data tells us conclusively that white people smoke marijuana comparably at the same rate as their black and brown counterparts, but black and brown people are being incarcerated at much larger rates than their white counterparts. And that inequity has to stop, because let's be honest, we're wasting resources.
Can I give you one statistic that's so damning?
Sure.
And this statistic is that 62% of the people that are in treatment and programs sponsored by the state of New Jersey are white Caucasian. 62%.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's
and
right.
In that's contrast, right. Mm-hmm. 62% of the people that are going into state prison are African American and Latino.
Yeah.
And the point that I'm making is that why is it that individuals have access to treatment from certain communities but don't have access to treatment from other communities?
Yeah,
and so
absolutely.
That if we
yeah,
understand
listen. Mm-hmm.
in New Jersey that there's a close correlation between addiction and imprisonment, perhaps what we need to really examine is that we provide for addiction treatment in all venues, in all facilities, and not just for a certain percentage.
Now, listen, Jim, you're right. And again, it sort of lends itself to what I've been saying on this program for a year now, and also well over 2 years on my local show in Hudson County, is this narrative of that, you know, what I really am not happy about right now with the legislature specifically, Jim, is, and I get it, you know, we in terms of, you know, recreational legalization, I get it. You know, you can't just rush that. You have to sort of be a little more methodical. But with the decriminalization aspect, Jim, what in the world is the legislature waiting for? This needs to get done as soon as possible, because, again, we're wasting resources. We're wasting manpower when it comes to law enforcement. When, let's be honest, Jim, we know that when it comes to marijuana usage, right, there is no correlation. You know it because, you know, you work in jails and you work with inmates and you sat down and looked at cases. There is no correlation when it comes to violent crime and marijuana. But we're incarcerating people for marijuana when, let's be honest, we could focus those resources on more violent offenders. When we know that, you know, opioid usage or cocaine or heroin, those are, you know, more serious drugs that contribute to violent crime. And
I agree with you about decriminalization. You know, actually, I think Portugal, more than any other country in the world, has the right direction, because Portugal understands that addiction is a disease
And instead of criminalizing it, they treat it. Needs to be. And, you know, it's taken me a long time to get to this place. I mean, I was not a great proponent when I started down this road working for Integrity House for medication-assisted treatment, whether it's Suboxone or Naltrexone or Vivitrol, because, you know, I sort of grew up in a more traditional, but the fentanyl is so powerful. The heroin is so powerful. So I think what you're going to see with the legislature, working with the legislature and the governor, is they want to take a comprehensive approach. They're looking at expungement, which is going to be very important. I think the legislation from Senator Cunningham is going to be groundbreaking.
Absolutely.
I think that's basically saying if you haven't committed a crime in 10 years, your criminal history will literally be wiped out. I think that's going to be major. I think there's also going to be understanding the importance of medical marijuana. I mean, studies have shown for people that are active in heroin addiction that access to marijuana could actually lower the chances of overdose. And this has been medically documented. So I think you're going to see some changes. I think decriminalization is going to happen. But then you also have, you know, and I hate to say this because I was a mayor for 11 years, but, you know, if I'm living next to you and I'm living next to, you know, Mary and Johnny, and Johnny is smoking and Mary doesn't want it, and we're in a tenement building, how do you deal with those confrontations? How do you deal with, you know, and so I think there are a lot of practical questions. So I think studying and being thoughtful is not a bad thing.
Well, listen, you're right about that. And, you know, one of the things, Jim, and again, going back to your time as governor, you know, when you stepped down in 2004, I mean, it was a very different New Jersey. It was a very different sort of national landscape when it comes to the way we look at drug, you know, recreational drug usage. We know that marijuana has changed a lot in the sense of the public arena. We know that it's been a permanent part of pop culture for many years, if not decades, when it comes to our movies, our television, music, art, literature. And we know that, you know, the times have changed. I think that I was just having this conversation with my students today, and I've had this conversation with my dad and others about this topic. And, you know, if I had to narrow it down to something really simplified, Jim, I would just say there's still a very large generational disconnect and divide that exists when it comes to how we perceive marijuana, right? Because, I mean, listen, let's think about this. You know, 30 years ago.
Do you think that's fair, though, for your father's generation? I mean, I agree with everything you just said. It's generational. Mm-hmm. But like, I respect, you know, whether it's our parents or our grandparents or elders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I mean, there are legitimate concerns, and I think that I agree with you so strongly on the decriminalization. But I think parents and grandparents and people that are older that are like, let's go a little slower on this, because I think they have concerns, maybe you could even say fears, that they want addressed.
Well, again, Jim, and it sort of lends itself to the point I was just going to make is, you know, 30 years ago, I remember that fateful Sunday night on, you know, primetime television, seeing then President Ronald Reagan in the Oval Office with First Lady Nancy Reagan. And we saw those famous words that started a campaign and a crusade, and it was, you know, just say no. And we saw the mantra about the war on drugs and how we, you know, and let's be honest, Jim, you know, again, I'm not a cynical person, but I'm a realist. I look at data. I mean, the war on drugs, Jim, has been an abject failure. Let's talk real. You know what I'm saying? Let's be honest about it. It's been an abject failure. I think we've seen that we've poured billions of dollars into this mission, and it really has not. I think it's been a failure. It really has. And I think, you know, we've been incarcerating people, especially about marijuana.
And I agree with you,
wrongfully, for decades.
But
yeah,
I agree with you 100%. But let me just push back. We can't say, yes, it's been a failure, but we're only 5% of the world's population, but we consume 99% of the world's hydrocodone. And if we're consuming 99% of that opioid,
that is not a good thing for our families and for our children.
Sure.
And so while I agree with you 1,000% that the war on drugs has been a failure, we can't, what I would respectfully say, we can't like flip the equation and say that means that, I mean, we're the most over, I mean, you know, I see this, and you know, the television advertisements from the pharmaceutical companies, the prescriptions, you know, when I get a wisdom tooth pulled, a doctor gives me a prescription for oxycodone for 4 days or for 8 days.
Sure.
There's something to be said, like, you know, maybe my mother was like, take one aspirin, not even two aspirin. I mean, there's something to be said that we are the most overly medicated cohort in the history of the world. And,
yes,
and
agreed.
That,
yeah.
That is not without a damage. That's not without a cost to our children and to our families.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I guess what I'm saying is, yes, the war on drugs was a failure, but that I also would argue that America has – that our culture – is where I would just like, you know, right now, I think part of it was, remember those faces when we were kids, when people would say, when you go to the doctor's office, they say, well, assess your pain. And whether it was a happy face or sad face or medium face, is that we became very much concerned about pain. But when you use something like oxycodone or Percocet to do away the pain and the impact that it has in terms of the biochemistry of the body, that also has a cost when you administer those drugs. And so what I'm saying is, it's all about having a sensible balance. And so yes, we've lost the war on drugs because of a host of reasons, and yes, there should be decriminalization. But I'm also concerned as a father, I'm also concerned as a member of the community, that I see so many young people being what I perceive to be, and maybe this is old-fashioned, the amount of drugs for almost every ailment, there's a level of comfort that I think isn't always a good thing. Does that make any sense?
No, listen, I agree with you, and I'm totally on board with your observation about that we're so overly medicated as a society, and we see that, whether it's with our children, whether it's with our pain management, the way doctors, you know, address this. And listen, and I think that one of the serious, you know, I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, when we talk about the pharmaceutical companies, Jim, and we talk about this opioid crisis in New Jersey that's reaching like, well, it's already reached an alarming cataclysm, as they say. You know,
exactly. 3,200 people died. And when you look at the pharmaceutical companies, Purdue Pharmaceutical, and how they were advertising to doctors and encouraging doctors to prescribe oxycodone. This was a part of a deliberate strategy to increase market share, to increase dollars at the expense of human lives.
No, it is. It is, and it's unfortunate because we know that the pharmaceutical industry has such a stranglehold, especially here in New Jersey. And I'm sure maybe even going back to your days as governor, Jim, I mean, we know that they had a stranglehold, and it seems like that grip has not loosened whatsoever. Am I wrong in that observation?
I think, you know, the pharmaceutical companies do so many good things, and but
sure.
Medication is something very, very unique, and oxycodone and Percocet is particularly an area of concern, because after you run out of your legal prescriptions, the next stop is heroin. And then the next stop is fentanyl.
And that's dangerous. I mean, that is lethal.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's dangerous. It's lethal, and it's certainly something that is.
And when you start talking about 3,200 deaths in New Jersey, I mean, draw the line.
We lead the nation in opioid deaths. I mean, it's just an awful distinction to have, for sure. You know, Jim, you know, you've always been a progressive. Maybe liberal, whatever the word is. You know, I know sometimes people are very, you know, sensitive when it comes to labels, especially within our political climate for many years. And, you know, you've always been a very devoted Democrat. You've been devoted to you know, basically the ideals and principles of the Democratic Party. And that's, you know, that's great. And you know, some people will applaud that, some people won't. But I really wanted to pick your brain about this because, and I've talked about it on this show repeatedly, and as an academic, I'm just concerned, Jim, when it comes to sort of the political climate that we live in and that we've been living in for many, many years now. It seems that, you know, identity politics has occupied a permanent presence in our political narrative. And to be honest with you, Jim, I don't like it whatsoever. I think it's dangerous. I think well, listen, and the reason, and again, and I'm not trying to be,
no, I
you know,
get
I'm
it.
Not trying to be dramatic.
You know,
dramatic,
you
but,
go up to
but,
the, when, no, well, you know, you go
toxic.
Up to the Franklin. Yeah, you go up to the FDR Library in Hyde Park, and I'm a big, I mean, it was Kennedy, Lincoln, and FDR are my heroes. And
sure.
And you look at, you know, you look at Roosevelt's speeches, and Roosevelt was talking, the only things we have to fear is fear itself. And so and you talk about the four freedoms, and he talked about America, and he talked about, you know, putting America back to work. And so there was a sense of shared destiny. There was a sense of shared values. There was a sense of shared pain and a sense of putting America back to work, fighting, you know, the Nazi army. So there was a sense that we were all in this together. And so I think the danger, I mean, the identity politics has its value internally, but the danger is that it can cut against a sense of belonging to the greater whole. And in this case, the greater whole is the nation. So, you know, it's so funny because my sister she taught third grade, she would celebrate St. Patrick's Day. And they had all these kids from throughout all over the world, and they wore their crazy green hats or whatever. And I would say to her, Sharon, I mean, well, what are you teaching them? And she says, I'm teaching them about being an immigrant. And so it's trying to turn, I mean, the American experiment is so powerful because part of it is the universality of our experience. But if it needs to be universal, though, it needs to be shared. And I think your point's well taken. It has to be a shared experience.
No, you know what? You're right, Jim. And again, it's sort of, you know, my concern really is that it's become toxic for some years now, where when we're talking about identity politics and where there seems to be, whether it's pop culture, whether it's politics at the state level or at the national level, it seems that, you know, inserting gender or race or skin color or orientation into every argument possible. I mean, that turns, listen, Jim, I'm a middle of the road guy. You know, when it comes to a lot of social issues, I can be progressive. You know, I can, when it comes to economic issues or, you know, proper governance or responsible economic policy, you know, I don't
but,
like
but
to
then,
say I'm conservative.
But then
Brennan,
but let me just push back. But then to be progressive means you have to, you know, I would argue you have to be honest because, you know, you can't be sort of like whether it's dirty water in Flint River or whether it's, you know, the crack cocaine epidemic among communities of color. And then it was a criminal justice problem. And then when opioids came into, you know, the majority community became a public health problem. So part of this is, I think the frustration is, and a legitimate part of the frustration is that, you know, you look in terms of New Jersey. New Jersey has the worst racial and ethnic disparity in the nation in terms of incarceration.
Yes,
and
that's
so
right.
What's
I knew
frustrating
that.
To,
right.
What, yeah, what's frustrating to people, what's frustrating to folks is, like, the stats that I just shared. Why is 62% of the kids, young people, getting into treatment? Why do they look like Jim McGreevy? And why do 62% of the people that are going into prison, and I see with my clients, they can't get into drug court because, you know, they've been charged with a low-level crime. But the point is, if somebody's an addict, if an addict is an addict is an addict, you need to provide them for treatment. And I think so part of the frustration among certain communities is the system hasn't always worked fairly or equitably. And that's where the you know, why do we tolerate the outrageous amounts of gun violence in our urban cities? I mean, if that happened
in our wealthier suburbs, people, you know, it would be changed overnight. So, you know, I think, you know, there are times when people are rationally angry, legitimately so. I mean, when I look, you know, when I look at families, you know, the DACA children, I guess what I'm saying is I don't always see the great benefits of this great country being applied equally. And for Jim McGreevy, my grandfather, my grandparents, my grandmother, it was all about the next generation does better. And you pull yourself up by hard work and sweat equity. And you look at, you know, candidly, this country in terms of our agricultural economy, in terms of our hospitality industry, would collapse without the sweat equity of Latino labor who's supporting it. But then if that's true, well, then their children ought to be afforded the opportunity for the same college higher education as Jim McGreevy's kids. And so I guess I agree with you. Identity politics isn't a preferable way to make a political statement, but sometimes it's a reaction to what people perceive to be as the inequities of certain systems.
You know what? That's a good observation, Jim, and I don't disagree with that. I know, you know, you brought up some points right now in your narrative, and, you know, sort of going back to your time as governor and, you know, even now in 2019, and I want to sort of pick your brain about this because, you know, you brought up the issue of gun violence.
Well, then I got to put my daughter to bed so I don't get in trouble.
Yeah, real quick. Yeah, I know I have to let you go soon, but real quickly, you know, going back to your time as governor and even till today, though, Jim, you know, gun laws in New Jersey have always been very strict. Some Second Amendment advocates would argue they're draconian, but the bottom line is we're still seeing perhaps the strictest gun laws in the country, and we're still seeing gun violence throughout the state. And I think that's disappointing. I don't think there's a magic wand that can fix this, but in your time when you were governor, even till now, like, how do you view the issue very briefly?
No, it's just, you know, I have friends of mine that, you know, that hunt. And I respect that, but part of it is that we really have to have some sensible level of background checks. I mean, when the majority of the NRA membership understands the importance of mental health checks, in God's name, you know, why are certain people being prohibited from going on planes, but the same individuals can secure themselves a semi-automatic assault weapon? I mean, that's just not sensible. And so I think, you know, whatever, you know, in the political discourse, you know, I remember an old gentleman said to me, common sense is not so common. But it's just that you have to try to be, like, grounded in what works. And you look at other countries that had problems with gun violence. You look at Australia, and you look at other countries. And frankly, they had the wherewithal to change it. So, I mean, my point is hunting and the owning of weapons is part of the American experience, but we need to understand the importance of rational background checks, protecting to make sure that the people who purchase guns, if we track hazardous waste because we're afraid of pollutants, if we track prescription drugs because we're afraid of abuse, like, how much more so should we be aware of who's purchasing and who's selling arms that can kill people indiscriminately? And, you know, I've got friends of mine that hunt and that belong to the NRA, and they themselves espouse this view. So I just think we need more rational monitoring to protect. I mean, we've got an obligation to the whole of society.
You know what, Jim? Well said, and I'm sure our listeners, again, will you know, come to a judgment on their own based on what they've heard tonight. But before I let you go, I want to thank you for coming on tonight. I mean, I feel I could have you on for 3 hours and not get through everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Because you're such a great guy.
Half the audience is asleep. But I do want to say one thing. I want to say thank you for your advocacy and for allowing ideas to be fleshed out. Because this is how democracy is supposed to work, right? It's not all supposed to be you know, poll-driven and anesthetized and pristine. It's supposed to be, you know, give and take, and that's part of the dynamic, right, so that people can make their own decisions. But I just ask people to think that
You know, what we're spending today on a jail cell and a prison cell in New Jersey in America is upwards of $55,000 a year. So that when you put somebody away for, you know, that extended period of time, people understand when somebody gets a 20-year or 10-year sentence, times that 55 by a 10-year sentence, you're talking over $500,000. And so people have got to understand at the end of the day that it's with addiction treatment, it's with giving people skills so that they can work in the workplace, employment skills, and connecting people to healthcare. People can come back to lead productive lives. And if I can, Fernand, we all don't start the race of life from the same place you did or the same place I did. And part of the challenge of a great nation is allowing people to realize their God-given potential. And that means because they've made a mistake, even a serious mistake, we're not going to condemn them to that hell for the rest of their lives, but that we're going to provide them with the skills and the hope and the opportunity to build a family and to be the persons that they were meant to be. And that's what reentry is. And I think that's what we're called to do as neighbors and as Americans.
You know, that's well said, Jim. Before I let you go, again, I want to thank you for your transparency tonight. I'm sure there are a lot of some things that were not easy to talk about tonight, but I appreciate your honesty about it. I do give my guests every week the floor because, you know, we've had a good conversation for over an hour, but now the chance is yours. The floor is yours, Jim. So if you got a question for me or you got something to say to me, go ahead, shoot. What you got?
So what do you think is in terms of the state of the nation and what's going on in Washington? I'd be fascinated to hear your thoughts, Regine, about what, you know, with the president and Speaker Pelosi and what's going back and forth, and what do you think? How is this ultimately resolved on the budget?
Oh, wow. You know, Jim, that's a loaded question. I could spend 2 hours with you on this and not get through everything. let me be as succinct as I can. I think what we're seeing now is the typical sort of partisan politics that has been, you know, part of our subconscious for decades. You know, whether it's a Republican in the White House or a Democrat, and there's divided government in terms of what party occupies which chamber of Congress. This is nothing new. And I know that especially in this 24-hour news cycle, the smartphone society we live in, where we're constantly checking our phones for news and social media is allowing us to opine about these issues constantly. You know, it's disappointing. You know, regardless of where you stand in the political aisle, I think that both sides certainly have grievances that they want to air and that they want to talk about when it comes to opening the government and keeping it. Certainly my heart goes out to, you know, 800,000 people that aren't being compensated right now. Tomorrow, as a matter of fact, is the second pay period of the year where they're not getting a paycheck tomorrow. So, and I know federal employees and I certainly feel for them, but it doesn't surprise me though, Jim, about what's going on in Washington. And I think that for many years now, I think that the political climate nationally has been extremely polarizing, and that's not changing anytime soon. I think people dig their heels into, you know, their specific side of the political aisle, and some people don't want to budge. And sometimes when you're not budging, you're not talking. And if you're not talking, you're not negotiating. If you're not negotiating, you're not getting things done. So I think as someone who's a political junkie and a political science aficionado, it's disappointing to see this, but I'm hoping that it can come to an end soon where, again, all sides can agree, where government can function again and hopefully be competent in its operation. But, you know, right now, though, Jim, it's a really difficult time. Some might call tonight, you know, today's political climate toxic. Some might call it polarizing. Some might call it challenging. There's a plethora of adjectives, man, that we can apply to what's going on. And, you know, it's unfortunate because I love politics. It's a part of my life. It's what I do for a living, not just only teaching it in the social sciences, but what I do with this show and Insider NJ. So I don't know if that answer suffices, but that's the best I can do under the time constraints right now with you.
No, it's good. It's just, but I think it goes back to fundamentally our values. And if you put the country first, before the person, before the party, I mean, as I would argue FDR did, as Kennedy did, as Lincoln did, you know, you have the good outcomes. And so I think that's, but anyway, we'll have a longer conversation about who's right or who's wrong on this one for another time.
Sure. And Jim, again, you've been a gentleman tonight. Thank you for coming on. Again, thank you for answering some tough questions and giving us answers that a lot of people, not just in Jersey City and Hudson County, but statewide, wanted answers to. And I appreciate your honesty. I look forward to having you back on. And do me a favor, tell everybody you know how much you love Politically Direct, okay? Can you promise me that?
I will. I will. Myself and Boulevard.
All right.
All right. Take
well,
care.
Listen,
God bless.
Again, Jim.
And thank you for your time. And thank you for
thank,
your service.
Thank you for your time and service as well, Jim. Have a good night, man.
All
take
right, care,
folks, here.
Bye-bye.
You too. All right, folks, 925 here on the East Coast. And listen, a great episode tonight here on Blog Talk Radio with the 52nd governor of New Jersey. And folks, again, listen, you know, I can ask the questions. I'm going to get the answers that I possibly can. For those of you that tuned in tonight, certainly, you know, Governor McGreevy had a lot to say about the ongoing situation in Jersey City with the Jersey City Education and Reentry Program. I know that he's been in the center of a political storm there. I don't think that saga is going away anytime soon. We'll find out. But I appreciate it. I appreciate him coming on, talking about it openly. I would like to get some representatives from the other side as to how they view this situation. And, you know, I'll do my best to get those guests on here on the show. But, you know, again, you know, aside from his advocacy, which we talked about at length, and we certainly talked about a lot of criminal justice reform that's necessary in New Jersey, I think people tuning in tonight got a different side of Jim McGreevy, a side that maybe a lot of people aren't used to hearing, a side that people perhaps are not familiar with. But I'm glad he came on, and certainly he didn't have to. He didn't have to come on and discuss this, what's going on in Jersey City with him, and again, his recent removal as executive director of the JC ERP. And, you know, again, you know, all I can say to you tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is, you know, you decide, you know, you make your own determinations, make your own judgments, decide for yourselves what's at the heart of this matter. And, you know, I'll certainly keep you updated here on the show as to any further developments concerning Jim McGreevy, again, the Jersey City Education and Reentry Program. A lot of good people work there. A lot of good people that I know personally are employed there. They make a difference in the lives of people that, let's be honest, you know, they've been marginalized to some extent. And, you know, some people that are just trying to pick up the pieces of their lives, I get it. You know, there are some people who are really trying. And I saw that firsthand when I went to their Thanksgiving brunch and I gave a speech that day. And I saw firsthand all the volunteers and people that give up their time for that. It's sad. It's tragic because it dominated the news cycle up here in Hudson County. But we'll find out. You know, we'll see what happens in the weeks and months ahead. And, you know, again, we'll keep you posted here on Blog Talk Radio. All right, folks, here 928 on the East Coast. And, you know, we're about to wrap up soon. But, you know, again, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast with the 52nd governor of New Jersey, Jim McGreevy, you can always go to www.insidernj.com/podcasts. You can listen to the episode in its entirety from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Again, www.insidernj.com/podcasts. That's plural. You know, let me know what you thought about tonight's guest and previous guests as well here on Politically Direct. Now, if you have a topic or issue, if you want to maybe opine about Jim McGreevy's appearance tonight, what he had to say, what did you like, what didn't you like, what should I have asked that I didn't, and, you know, anything else in between, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. Also, check me out on Twitter. Put up a lot of content on there @ProfessorFUribe. I do appreciate all the new followers every day. Tons of likes. Again, it's telling me that you like my content, and I'm grateful for it. So, again, don't forget to like the show on Facebook, folks. Again, look it up, Politically Direct. You'll see me there. You know, my handsome little face there on the profile pic, so you can't miss it. And, again, just click the like button. Share it when you can on your Facebook wall and tell your friends all about it. So, again, ladies and gentlemen, I can't say enough about really, you know, as I celebrate 1 year here on the air on Blog Talk Radio with Politically Direct and certainly via my partnership with Insider NJ, I cannot thank you enough for your support, to my family, to my loved ones, to my significant other, and friends that support me, students, both past and present, colleagues who may not always like what I have to say, but they respect it because they know that I'm coming from a point of view that's informed and educated. So, again, I appreciate it to everyone that tunes in. And, again, happy birthday to Politically Direct. It's a great first birthday. We're looking forward to, as year two continues, to bring you insightful guests, the most interesting topics, and to talk about what's going on in the state of New Jersey in only the way that I can deliver it, and really in only the way that this podcast can, because no other podcast in New Jersey is doing this, and I'm proud to say that. I'm not saying it to be, you know, braggadocious, but I'm just telling you the truth. No other podcast in New Jersey does what I do on a weekly basis, and the reason I do it is because I feel that you, the people, deserve it. You know, we need to hold those in power accountable. We need to ask the tough questions. We need to get answers. And that's what I'm here to do for you folks. And I'll continue doing it as year two continues here for Politically Direct. Again, whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry for my students, both past and present. Again, spring 2019 semester just started this week. It's back to work for me after a month off. You know, I enjoyed the month off, being home, being in, binge watching a lot of shows on Netflix and Hulu. Checking out the WWE Network, I can't believe how quickly the month went by, but it's back to work this week. I love it. It's great to go back to educating and talking to students about the issues that matter today and talking about, again, theoretical frameworks and terminology and concepts, and that's what makes teaching so fulfilling. So all my fellow teachers, my fellow colleagues in higher education, it's back to work this week. Have a great semester, and certainly, you know, let's keep doing a good job in educating our students on a daily basis. And folks, again, don't forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage and the absolute best journalism concerning the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. It's always through Insider NJ. Once you go on the website, you can click on the subscribe button at the very top, and you're automatically enrolled free of charge with the morning intelligence briefing. That'll get conveniently delivered to your inbox every morning. So when you get up in the morning and you're having your morning coffee, maybe watching ESPN or Fox Sports in the morning. You know, like myself, I'm a big sports fan, so I'm always watching the sports commentary shows, or also, you know, sort of scrolling through the channels of the morning cable news shows on Fox News and MSNBC and CNN. I do check it out. Obviously, we're always on our phones. You know, the morning intelligence briefing really gives us a wealth of information. And it's brought to you by, again, what I would argue is the best journalism in the state of New Jersey. And it's always Insider NJ, www.insidernj.com. Folks, don't forget, you can always depend every day on Insider NJ. All right, folks, again, do have a great weekend. Certainly, please party responsibly. For all my fellow pro wrestling fans, enjoy the Royal Rumble this Sunday, live from Chase Field in Phoenix. Enjoy TakeOver on Saturday night. And you know, for us pro wrestling fans, the road to WrestleMania begins this Sunday with the Royal Rumble, as the winner of the Royal Rumble, both the men's Rumble match and the women's Rumble match, will have their chance to headline and main event WrestleMania 35, which comes to us from MetLife Stadium, folks, right here in New Jersey in April. I'm excited about going. I know a lot of my fellow pro wrestling fans are excited. So enjoy the Royal Rumble, again, as the road to WrestleMania begins this weekend. Enjoy it, folks. Again, please party responsibly. Again, check us out always, www.insidernj.com/podcast. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Share it. Tell me what you think about it. And I'll continue working hard for you, my loyal listening audience. And remember, it's real. It's here. It is indeed Politically Direct. Good night, Jackson, New Jersey. The home of Great Adventure, Six Flags, that I love to go to. I haven't been there in a few years, but once the weather gets warmer, hopefully it's something I want to go back to. But good night to all my fans in Jackson, New Jersey, down in Central Jersey. You know, shout out to all of you. Enjoy your night. Hopefully this great warm weather stays here after the frigid Monday we had. Hopefully some good weather lies ahead for us. So, folks, again, have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you here next week on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.